So good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. And here, meaning this virtual space of the Spirit Rock Meditation Center's BIPOC Voices series. And we'll begin as usual with about 30 minutes of meditation, in this case, guided mindfulness meditation. If you have some other form of meditation that you do, including and maybe especially movement meditation, I sincerely invite you to do whatever practice will help you the most. There's a lot of talk these days, I think it's good talk, about how we as Black Indigenous people of color can resource ourselves. And I therefore invite you to see this next period of time for practice as a time for you to resource yourself in any way that works for you. And around 9:35 a.m. Pacific time, we'll have a 5-minute break, followed by I have prepared a Dharma talk on the Buddhist or a Buddhist understanding of the quality of developing patience within the context of social justice movement building. And we'll have time for Q&A and discussion and sharing as a learning community, ending at 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. So if that works for you, let's begin now with 30 minutes of mindfulness meditation, either in a stationary posture, which means seated on a chair, sofa, perhaps cross-legged or kneeling on meditation mats and cushions. Could be lying down, particularly if we have chronic illness, chronic pain, spinal injury, or partially reclining on a reclining chair. Again, to bring more ease, more comfort to the body so that we can relax. And it also could be movement meditation such as yoga, tai chi, qigong, deep breathing, whatever works for you. And the guidance will be in mindfulness meditation. I'll begin by inviting the bell of mindfulness 3 times. And I really like the meditation verse or gatha, GATHA, that means meditation verse, from the great teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, who says, when we hear the bell of mindfulness, and we can actually use any sound as an invitation to mindfulness. So when we hear the sound, we can say to ourselves, listen, listen. This wonderful sound brings me back to my true self. If we're practicing mindfulness meditation in a stationary, which means relatively non-moving posture, we might not be. If we are, you're invited to take a moment and move and settle your body to find a position and a posture that for you, not anyone else, that for you in this moment embodies as much comfort, grounding, centering, and ease and spaciousness as is possible for you in this moment. So don't be afraid to do what my yoga teacher calls wiggling a little. This means adjusting the posture. You could do it in large ways. However, once you're in your basic posture, don't be afraid to wiggle and move around, to experiment, maybe a little bit this, maybe a micro adjustment there, until we find the posture that is working best for us. And we might take a moment and affirm that this is also a posture which supports our feeling a sense of our own dignity and self-worth, not only as human beings, but also as living beings. What posture is it? Don't worry about what you look like from the outside. How can you embody through how your body is arranged in this moment? That sense of dignity and self-worth. Which is not dependent on anything except that we are alive, we are present. We are part of the web of life and we matter. And that's for each of us to discover on our own, that posture, that embodiment. And relax, allowing the eyes to gently close or keeping them open just a little to let in some light from the room, in which case the gaze is soft and unfocused. The attention is within. And if you like starting with a few deeper breaths, or simply allowing the breath to be natural as it is, that's the direction we're going in. These are not breathing exercises. And that doesn't mean that we might not experiment with the breath a little bit in order, once again, to try to bring in those qualities of comfort, ease, spaciousness. It could be a little, it could be a lot. And perhaps do a kind of inner check. How safe do I feel right now? We need safety in order to meditate. And I hope that you're in a safe space at this moment. It might not always be the case, and therefore we can ask ourselves, have I done all I can to create the safest space possible for my meditation practice at this moment? and allowing the breath to be as it is. Short, medium, long, rough, or smooth. Simply noticing perhaps that we are breathing. And relaxing into observing with great kindness, all the kindness you can cultivate for yourself in this moment. Noticing any physical sensations, perhaps hearing sounds, and trying to gently resist the very natural tendency to begin thinking about things, going off into various stories, memories, plans, worries, things we're looking forward to. And instead, making a conscious choice to remain in the present moment in a very simple way. This is radically simple. We're choosing, if we like, to notice, sensation of coolness on my legs. Tingling in bottom of both feet. Noticing many, many thoughts arising. Worried. Aha, it's Mother's Day. I've tried really hard to be a great mom, yay me. And then gently let it go as we notice, observe. In this very simple way, relax. What are the sensations you feel in your body? If you have chronic pain or pain or a lot of emotional pain, which of course many of us feel, I invite you to gently try to shift your attention to an object of attention which is less painful. It might be neutral, maybe a little pleasant. At least try to shift it. And notice parts of the body that are doing okay enough, and parts of our experience that are okay enough. And you can remain with mindful awareness that sounds are happening, That's called listening meditation or mindfulness of hearing. Or you can remain with mindfully noticing any physical sensations arising. We might notice in a simple way our mood. We might notice we feel quite speeded up, perhaps out of anxiety or anger, which is natural. Or we might notice we feel relatively slowed down, perhaps calmer. There's no value attached to any of this. There isn't good or bad, because we're more interested in noticing more accurately what our internal experience is, so that we get a more clear picture and more self-knowledge. Therefore, we have choices. We can stay with hearing meditation. We might be remaining with mindfully noting any physical sensations comfortable enough. Or, if this is suitable for you, relaxing more deeply, we might drop into mindful awareness of sensations of the in-breath and the out-breath as we breathe naturally. Where do you feel these sensations in your body? And I hope you can hear, this has a certain attitude to it. We're inviting an attitude of patience and curiosity and kindness. It's like, where do I actually feel the inhalation? What does it feel like? Where do I actually feel the exhalation in my body? What does that feel like? We're on a journey and an adventure of discovery. Where do I feel the breath? What am I experiencing? If you're practicing mindfulness meditation, you get some bonus points if you notice when something changes. Once again, we're practicing accuracy, precision of observation and noticing. Do I notice the exact moment when the in-breath becomes the out-breath? Might I notice when awareness of a sensation of coolness changes? Now I'm aware of a sensation of warmth. Can I notice when my mood shifts and very subtly changes from discontent to a feeling of contentment, or vice versa? And now, if you like inclining the mind in our last minute of mindfulness meditation, we're shifting to just a moment, a recognition of the meditation on loving kindness or universal friendship and universal goodwill. May all beings be well and happy. May all living beings without exception be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all living beings, ourselves included, especially ourselves at this moment, may we be peaceful and may we be deeply happy. May we learn to take care of ourselves with joy and with ease. May we be happy. Thank you for beautiful practice. There are 40 of us here together in spiritual sangha or community. And let's take, if you like, a 5-minute break, and we'll return in 5 minutes, and I prepared a talk to share with you. Once again, thank you for your practice, whatever that may be, however you define it, however it's evolving. I know that this is a spiritual practice that is formed from what you've learned from various teachers, mentors, sources, and also how you've evolved it through your unique creativity and response to your unique human life. So therefore, as I'm looking around this virtual room, I see some of your faces if you have your cameras on. If you'd like to turn your camera on, I do like to look at you. And if you wish to keep it off, of course, that's completely your choice. I know some of you. Hi. It's so good to see you. So let me start out again by saying, introducing myself. My name is Mushim, M-U-S-H-I-M. I'm aware that we're all hearing people, and we do have closed captioning, which I think is artificial intelligence generated, so it's helpful and then a little bit limited, that we're all hearing people. So my name is Mushim, Korean Buddhist name I received in 1983 in Toronto, Canada, at the Zen Buddhist Temple, which was a Korean lineage temple. I myself am Japanese American. My first name, secular name, is Patricia. My dad gave that to me. I grew up in Ohio. And our family name is Ikeda, I-K-E-D-A. Again, a Japanese name. All four of my grandparents came to the United States. My mom's folks came to Hawaii. My dad's folks ended up farming in Indiana. And I grew up in the Midwest, so I'm called a Sansei, S-A-N-S-E-I. That means third generation Japanese American. My pronouns are she and her. And I am zooming in from the occupied land of the Confederated Villages of the Lishan, L-I-S-J-A-N, Ohlone, O-H-L-O-N-E, people, otherwise known as Oakland, California, where I've made my home for 30 years. I've been in Oakland for 30 years, and I raised my child here, who is now a middle-aged adult living with me. So I want to start out by acknowledging in the United States, it is Mother's Day. That can have a lot of meaning for many people. It does have a history to it, which we can Google. And usually I have a very strict policy. I will not work on Mother's Day. I just won't. I teach a year-long program at East Bay Meditation Center, and we usually meet on the second Sunday of every month, except for May, which is Mother's Day. I just won't do it. So this is not work for me. I'm looking forward to being with you. I'm enjoying being with you. This is part of my Mother's Day celebration. You are my Mother's Day gift. Thank you. What that means is thank you. Thank you for being present. Thank you for showing up. Thank you to Spirit Rock. Thank you to Emiko for having this BIPOC Voices Dharma Speaker Series. I suspect that part of this was born out of the pandemic, which set in to the Bay Area where I am in California a little over a year ago in the year 2020. Today is March 9th, 2021. And as much as a pandemic has brought and continues to bring unconceivable global suffering, there also have been these opportunities for virtual sanghas, spiritual communities, support groups, information groups, online trainings to spring up all over the world. Not everyone has internet access. For those who do, the opportunity has been for us to find one another, to make connections, to build community. And when we build community, we have the possibility to build movements. My talk today is titled, it's kind of long, it's titled Rise Up. Tactical patience means having a clear goal and not feeling defeated. This is linked to the intro song that some of you heard as you were coming into the room. I may ask for it to be played again. And I believe it is on the resource sheet that you can link to. It's on YouTube, and it's by Andra, A-N-D-R-A, Day, D-A-Y. It's called Rise Up. I've been listening to it constantly since the pandemic set in to pull myself up out of despair and anxiety. And I was very pleased to see Andra Day performing Rise Up as part of the presidential inauguration celebrations this year in January in the United States. And I talk about patience. This is a talk centering on a Buddhist interpretation of the word in English, patience, which has great significance and a lot of centrality in the dharmic or dharma understanding of how we can become happier and how we can benefit all life. So here's my talk on patience, which many people that's a word in English, and obviously, and it's a translation. And sometimes many people might interpret the word patience like, oh, that means mutely enduring crappy things, basically. Like, I'm just going to tough it out, hunker down, and just grit my teeth and wait until this thing passes over, or the kids' temper tantrums stop, or, I have to work this job, my boss is unbearable, my coworkers are full of microaggressions and the occasional macroaggression. This sucks. And however, I need to support my family, and there are good benefits. I'm just going to be patient. And that can sometimes be necessary. I'm not knocking that. If it's a conscious decision, then we know why we're doing it. However, there's another take on it. So this is a book that I really like. I'm not a student of Tibetan Buddhism. My entry was through Korean and Japanese Zen Buddhism. However, Tibetan Buddhism is part of the great northern division of Buddhism called the Mahayana, M-A-H-A-Y-A-N-A. Thank you so much, Emiko. There's a link in the chat to this book by Shambhala Publications. And it's by an eminent and deceased Tibetan teacher named Traleg, T-R-A-L-E-G, Kyabgon, K-Y-A-B-G-O-N, apologies for pronunciation, Rinpoche, R-I-N-P-O-C-H-E, meaning reincarnated teacher in the Tibetan tradition. Worth noting, for those of you who don't know, as far as I know, Tibetan Buddhism is the only division of Buddhism worldwide that recognizes so-called reincarnated teachers, and none of the other divisions do. It's unique to Tibet. It just isn't present anywhere else. And the Dalai Lama himself, the head of all Tibetan Buddhism, has said, no, I don't think I'm going to reincarnate. That's too old school. You people know democracy. Elect your leaders. Something to be cognizant of, so that we don't exotify and exoticize and orientalize this whole thing. All right, but back to this book. What is karma? What it is, what it isn't, why it matters, or karma is the name of it. And other people who have studied Tibetan Buddhism often say, this is a really good book. I got it because I was interested in learning more about karma, which is a very complex thing. In this book, Traleg Rinpoche says this. The great Buddhist teacher who was in India, revered by the Tibetans, Shantideva, and I'll tell you more about Shantideva in a moment, 8th century, states that patience is one of the most worthy of virtues to cultivate, more so than love and compassion, because according to Shantideva, if we have patience, love and compassion will surely arise in turn. Patience in this regard does not mean that we take things slowly, but that when things go wrong, we do not feel defeated. And I've quoted this many times in many Dharma talks, and I almost universally get, oh yeah, for many people, never thought of it that way. Patience in this regard does not mean that we just mutely endure and grind our teeth and take things slowly. But when things go wrong, we do not feel defeated. Patience and effort, in fact, make each other bigger. They are paired together, operating in tandem rather than simultaneously. Patience implies that we try our best, which will not always work out. But if we refuse to feel defeated by this, we will have achieved patience. We don't revert to an, oh, I failed again dialogue, but think, well, what could I have done to make it different? In other words, we don't go back to trying the same thing again. Instead, we think, it didn't work out this time, so there must be some reason why it didn't work. I should look into what might have made the difference. We have another go with intelligence. Therefore, according to Shantideva, Traleg Kyabgon Rinpoche says, to not feel defeated is to be patient. It is also how we learn to create good karma and live our life fully. I invite you to take a moment of reflection and just inquire, contemplate, what does the word patience mean to you? If you're a mindful journaler, you might grab a pen and just notice, what's your experience with that word? What inner stories about patience and impatience arise? What is your conditioning as a Black Indigenous person of color in relationship to the word patience? I've noticed that in my Buddhist teaching that Black Indigenous people of color tend to sort of light up when we hear this particular definition of patience. The word that's translated as patience is a translation from the word in Sanskrit, Romanized as K-S-A-N-T-I or K-S-H-A-N-T-I, Kshanti, or in Pali, P-A-L-I, the other ancient Buddhist language, Kanti. So same thing. So Kshanti or patience is part of a list, one of those Buddhist lists of six, what are called the six paramitas. P-A-R-A-M-I-T-A-S, You can just relax. You can Google this. We'll have it on the resource list. And paramita is usually translated as perfection. It's, getting things to be the most perfect that we can in terms of six spiritual qualities. In Mahayana Buddhism, which again is my lineage, these are six virtues or qualities developed and practiced by a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is a great being whose vow is to help relieve all suffering. So these qualities are practiced by a bodhisattva on their path of development to becoming a Buddha, a fully enlightened being. And these qualities are dana, the perfection of dana paramita, the perfection of generous giving. Shila, the perfection of the practice of ethics. Kshanti, patience. Virya, the perfection of the practice of vigorous effort in terms of spiritual practice. The fifth paramita is dhyana, and that's concentration. And the sixth is prajna, or panya. And prajna is highest, perfect, transcendent wisdom. It's in this system of Buddhism, which, we can just be invited to look at. We don't necessarily need to believe in it. Prajna is what we might call enlightenment, I guess. The great insight which transforms everything. And interestingly enough, prajna paramita, the word prajna paramita also means the mother of all Buddhas. The mother of all Buddhas. So again, happy Mother's Day. Prajna paramita, I'd like to uplift that at the same time as I'm talking about Kshanti. And I'll submit to you, in my own experience and teaching, the meditation that we do is not about learning to be calm and just smiling and being patient if someone treats you like shit, or just trying to shake it off and go on your way. Not that we shouldn't learn how to let things go if they're afflicting us. However, we can let go with intelligence. We can let go with remembering and learning what might be helpful to us next time. In other words, there's even what I would call a strategic dimension that's very important in how we practice. We have to be really smart about this. And we can increase our intelligence, spiritual intelligence, by being in community, by connecting to teachers whom we resonate with, and by stopping to consider people that we disagree with, whom we do feel, well, yeah, they're smart, and I think they're totally wrong. However, perhaps taking a moment and thinking, I've been wrong before myself. Maybe I'm missing something here. Could I learn from this? In Buddhism, how I was trained, I am a former monastic, and how I've developed as a practitioner, as a lay person, as a mother, meditation means exactly what Traleg Rinpoche said, learning through creative and repeated acts how not to feel defeated and how to keep learning. Once again, the practice of the bodhisattva, which is a term from Mahayana, or the northern school of Buddhism, which is part of my lineage, Thich Nhat Hanh, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. We have all taken versions of exactly the same spiritual vows, which are called the Bodhisattva vows. And a big characteristic of the ideal of the Bodhisattva is we never give up. We just never give up. And Here's a story that I heard from my original teacher, a Korean Zen master. I studied in, more than studied, I lived in temples in Ann Arbor, Michigan, mostly for initially, and then I did some training at our mother temple in Toronto. So I learned how to, as an American, to bow down before Canadians who were not at all reluctant to rise up against American domination and say, you know what, we actually are doing pretty well in Canada compared to you Americans, which I did not dispute at all. So I learned humility. If there's a Canadian in the room, I instantly hit the floor. So if they're criticizing me as an American, I will listen and I will learn. So from that teacher, I remember in the meditation hall, he once said, and in Zen, you often don't get a lot of explanation. Things are just kind of thrown out, which I like. It's quite direct. And then as time goes on, one might learn more, maybe scholarly knowledge, and that can be helpful. However, it's like living Dharma, what I call living Dharma. So the teacher said, once upon a time, once there was a person and they had a precious jewel in their hand and they were really enjoying their jewel. And they were walking on the beach. They were walking by the beach on a nice day and the ocean became jealous and wanted that jewel and put out a big wave and washed it out of the person's hand and sucked it back into the depths of the ocean. So instead of saying, you know, oh, you stupid ocean, you, or what can I do now? I've lost my most precious thing. This practitioner said, fine, be that way, and went and got a cup and went to the edge of the water and scooped up some of the ocean and ran up and poured it out on the beach and went back and scooped up some more ocean and went out and poured it out on the beach and said, I will continue this until I have my jewel back. Not feeling defeated. We could switch it up to more near the present day, Oakland, California. I've worked a lot with children. And I once talked to a third grader in an Oakland public school, and I said, hey, how was your day? And he said, pretty bad. I really had this terrible headache, indicating more like a migraine. And I said, I'm so sorry. And he said, that's okay. At recess, I went out on the yard, and I sat under a tree, and I meditated. Now, I am not of the school that tries to force children to meditate in some stereotypical way. I think children learn by play, and they learn through natural development, and they learn through mainly studying adults very closely. It's not what we say, it's what we do. And so I was surprised. This was a child raised in a Buddhist household, and I said, I'll just be transparent, it was my kid. And so I said, I'm so sorry, you know, mommy's sorry that you had a terrible headache. And I was surprised because I don't try to teach meditation to children. And I said, did meditating help? And he said, yeah, he said it helped a little. And if it helped a little, it could help a lot. And this has become my motto again, not feeling defeated. Yes, it's wonderful if we have an enlightenment experience and boom, we're transformed. It's wonderful if injustice suddenly there's some key event and it changes from injustice to justice. Very rarely. Or if it seems to, it's the flashpoint. It's a culmination of a very long series of efforts put in by countless numbers of people over time. So if something helped a little, it could help a lot, has become one of my own practice mottos. There has been what we could call the beginner's mind with wisdom. A martial arts master I know and often work with likes to cook and is a very good cook, and once kind of scandalized me by saying that in trying to master a certain dish, that he had ruined several batches of pretty expensive ingredients and had thrown them out into the compost and started over again. Now, I was raised to never waste food. And I realized when he said that, not that he believed in wasting food, but he wanted to get it right and he was willing to fail and learn from the failures. And I've observed that in entrepreneurs, in great practitioners, in people who are willing to get over being timid and say, all right, I've given it my best shot, total failure. What can I learn? I'm going to try again. And that changed me also. So patience, as Kshanti in the Buddhist sense, could be creativity in reframing things when we feel stuck or when there's a high degree of reactivity and dread and fear, which of course can be associated with trauma. Patience can be trying again, but toward what? I think it's very important to state, in my point of view, we need to be super clear, go through clarifying and discernment processes. My Catholic friends talk about the value of spiritual discernment, contemplation, to ask myself, well, what's my spiritual goal? What is it that I really want? On this journey, as I navigate, what's my destination? So I think we need to be clear about our goals and willing to shift and evolve the goals, applying intelligence and creativity. Melvin Escobar, a teacher at East Bay Meditation Center, who, like me, is a core teacher, my longtime yoga buddy, who is a yoga teacher, he's a Buddhist teacher and a yoga teacher and a psychotherapist, has said creativity is the opposite of trauma. And that's something, again, we don't need to believe. However, I put it out there for us to consider. Creativity is the opposite of trauma. How generative, how creative can we be in meeting the adverse circumstances that all of us, as Black Indigenous people of color, meet? Some of these conditions and sufferings may be similar, others may be quite different, according to the intersectionality of how we self-identify and how society identifies us. And learning how to tap into that creative root is so important. Kshanti Paramita, the perfection of patience in this sense of not feeling defeated, involves not a product, it's a process, which is common to a Dharmic or Buddhist understanding of everything, that we're always in process. Life is a process. Everything's a process. So we concentrate more on verbs than on nouns. To perfect patience, we're not thinking about perfection in an absolute sense. It means that we're willing to re-inspire ourselves and learn how to be inspired and to inspire others, to not feel defeated over and over and over again, to know what our goal is. In the Andra Day song says, I'll rise up 1,000 times for you. That's the great vow of the Bodhisattva. Andra Day isn't Buddhist. For you. And that means for all of you And all of you means all of us.